the term leaders and leadership is so laden with meaning within organizations, and it automatically triggers this kind of some people are leaders and great leaders, and they have these outstanding traits, and it defines something that is so kind of distant. So I think the question is, how can humanity develop leadership as a distributed phenomenon? And we understand that we can lead ourselves and lead our life, of course, within the responsibility for the greater whole. That's where we come back to the connectedness of everything again.
Welcome to Pyramid to Circles.
Pyramid to Circles.
This podcast is for the leaders and for the change makers who have the goal of evolving their company
towards more collective intelligence, more empowerment,
more self-organization, but asking themselves how to make this happen, where to start, and how to get inspiration from others.
Pyramid to Circles. Pyramid to Circles.
Welcome, everyone. Today, I would like to dig into the core topic of this podcast, that is the transformation towards self-organization. Why is that so that sometimes it fails? Why self-organization is simply difficult? The angle I would like to explore today is the one of the individuals in such a transformation. If self-organization is supposed to meet people's needs for more autonomy, for more space to take initiative, it's also challenging for them because it often confronts their own limits and bias. So as change agent, it is important that we understand the human mechanism at play when we speak about empowerment. To address this topic, I have the pleasure to receive a guest who is a seasoned self-organization specialist, a TED speaker, coach, and an entrepreneur. She has been among the first to teach and implement Holacracy in organizations since 2009. Her journey has led her to address in a very deep way the human dimension of self-organization. In a new book called New Stories of Love, Power, and Purpose, she invites us to understand our human potential and gives us some tools to unleash it. So, Christiane, welcome.
Wow, what a concise introduction. Thank you so much, Mikael. Thank you for inviting me. I'm super happy to be here.
Very, very welcome. I've introduced you a little bit. Maybe you want to complete. I just want to add that you are a seasoned entrepreneur and that you co-founded Encode together with Thomas Thomason, who was a guest in the podcast last year and is the co-founder of Holacracy One. And Encode's mission is to build new foundations for self-organizing enterprises where working, earning, and living on purpose becomes reality. And this is where we met a couple of years ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, thank you.
So my first question, maybe do you want to add anything about your, I'm sure saying anything about yourself that you want to add that we...
Maybe just the one aspect, because it's what you said, this is sort of at the core of this podcast, is that through working with Holacracy, I was invited or felt invited to really dig deeper and specialize on the human side of that transformation, and have worked on that field for, yeah, over 10 years now, together with working with and through Holacracy.
So you have experience, you have many experiences, because your book starts like this, and I was interested to start a conversation the same way, why sometimes it fails? Because if it's so good and so obvious, it should, you know, just happen everywhere, but it doesn't, not always, not easily. So in your experience of bringing the tools and the culture and of ways of working of self-organization, what are the big difficulties that you've seen, and why doesn't it always work? What it is that it makes it sometimes fail?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty big question, because there are a number of reasons, and I wouldn't even dare to say that I know them all, but I do think I've seen quite a bit of it. One is the reason why. So why does an organization decide, or why do the people who have the power to make that decision decide to go towards or move into self-organization? I think the reason why we do that is really, really important. And if the reason is purely to improve the efficiency of the organization, and the reason is to make, or the intention is to make people more happy, just to improve the result of the organization, it's not going to work. So that's one of the reasons, that the reason why is a big question. The second aspect, I think, is the approach that we sort of, as people, we have to become better or we have to develop so that we can do that. It's that kind of expectation you need to develop. And that sort of bias, that underlying message of you're not good enough, so I'm going to tell you where to develop and then you'll be good enough. It's that old when game, which is deeply unsettling. And those are two reasons. A third reason is, so shifting into self-organization is a holistic shift. And very often we have a saying in German and it's called wash me, but don't make me wet. It's like, okay, I'm going to pick and choose what I think, what I feel safe to allow to happen in that shift. And then I'm kind of going half the way. So one foot in some self-organizing practices, one foot holding on to the management hierarchy and the power structure it enables, that just won't work. And because, it is a fundamentally different paradigm, meaning a different belief system of how things work. So I'm really, there's a pathway there, but in the end, it's an all way in. So I think those are three reasons why, and I'm sure I probably could come up with a few more if I think about it longer.
Yeah. So you said there is it's all way in at the end. There is a pathway and people pick and choose sometime. And that's maybe why it doesn't always work. I'm very curious to see, because you, with your years of experience in this, and I know you have been just not just practicing, but also searching and experimenting new dimensions, especially both on the legal side, that is maybe a surprising for audience here, and also on the human, the culture side. And maybe that's more the topic of the book, that second part. When you say there is a, maybe in with your own words, how do you introduce what it is? Because it's a very fundamental question. I mean, I would expect everybody, the people who are listening to this podcast are interested in these topics, so they are already maybe sensible to it and they have their own education around it. But with your own words, when you introduce it, it's interesting to hear from a practitioner. How would you introduce what it is? And what are the subtle things in it beyond the few practices that make it a self-organization for real?
And when you say what it is, you mean self-organization.
Yes, exactly. Sorry,
right?
Self-organization.
Yeah, okay.
How would you define it in a broad way? Mm. Yeah, with the inner culture part of it.
Mm. Okay, let me start with the first part of your question,
yes.
The broad picture.
Yeah.
So what I have found over my years of practice and experience and my own personal journey, of course, is that if you see self-organization simply as a way to organize your business, then you very quickly get stuck into the question, what is the right solution? Is it holacracy, sociocracy, teal, whatever? And there's many different ways of going about this. And that's one thing. And the other thing that brought me to think and look deeper into it is that, again, what I said first, the reason why. Right? So why are we even doing that? And what I came to understand is, after going deeper and researching and reading a lot, is that self-organization is the oldest organizing principle that exists, which what I mean is, ever since the Big Bang, the universe has evolved. And so in a self-organized way, so the way I define self-organization, and in the context where I work, is that self-organization is the evolutionary organizing principle of the universe, so of everything. It is the natural principle, okay? Therefore, the principle of nature. And so when we, and that comes back to the why, based on my personal perspective, we have created, humanity has created a lot of issues on our planet because we have separated from nature and from natural dynamics and from each other. Yeah, it's that, I mean, I don't have to talk about this. That's broadly discussed and written about, right? So what does the consequences of seeing us separate? If you look at self-organization as the organizing principle of the universe, you can break it down right? So that's where the holarchy, everything is a whole and at the same time a part, right? That's how I look at the universe in its self-organized way. If we break that down, we can break that down and follow that organizing principle into the smallest parts, the atoms, quarks, you know, it just goes down ever more and up ever more. And that entire holarchy is self-organized, right? When we decide to self-organize the way we work with each other, and that's where I come to the why, it opens up a possibility to tune in into that dynamic. So I once wrote a couple of articles under the title of Tuning Into the Evolutionary Dance of the Universe, which means we can experience what we do again back as a part of the whole and try to mirror those natural dynamics in the way we organize work in service of the greater whole. And that's where we come to the question of what is purpose, right? So in service of the greater whole means sensing a purpose, a need, and serving that need is the purpose of that organization. And we can tune into the natural way of self-organizing evolutionary dynamics.
So you're saying that self-organization is versus one is a natural principle of evolution?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. We could take examples, but I cannot follow you here very well. And then you say that when we human, for kind of reasons, we have applied other principles to organize ourselves. And by doing so, unfortunately, we have separated us from our nature, from the nature mm-hmm. of life mm-hmm. itself in some ways. And we are a bit philosophical here, but I think we can follow that. And to quit meaning. So when we did that, we separated. And then and what we can do is by applying self-organization, we can reconnect some ways to this evolutionary principle that you call
yes.
also purpose. And you say purpose is the intention to address a need, if I understand you correctly.
Is to serve a need.
To serve a need. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but is a need good in where does a need come from? And what is a need and where does it come from? And do we always have to serve all the needs? And can we even serve all the needs? And mm-hmm. and how can purposes not be conflicting with each other in some ways or conflict? Yeah, conflicting to the needs of or the humans, or the needs of nature itself, or the needs of profitability in some cases, or speaking about organizations, how do you see that convergence of needs?
Mm-hmm. So I think there is, so if we understand, you know, evolution and it being self-organized and we tune into that, the need is an evolutionary phenomenon, right? In holacracy, we call it attention. It's really the same thing. So the need is a current reality and the pull towards something that appears to be better. And that depends. Nature follows, you know, attention, a pull, right? It grows and then again it diverges and converges, and all those are evolutionary phenomena, right? And when we do that, when a need arises, it could be there's lots of needs that human endeavors serve that are in nature, like cleaning the oceans or planting more trees, right? I mean, all those are needs that we as humans and other living beings, but let's talk about us as humans, we sense resonance with the need to serve, or we sense resonance with that need because there is something in us that is our individual purpose that calls us to engage for that. That's when that's when we do that within an organization, that's what we call purpose alignment, right? But I think we'll be able to dive deeper into that maybe a little bit later.
Sure. So you're saying that, if I understand you, you're saying that, okay, there are, a need is a pool, something that's pulling that is out there, that is a gap between what is and what should, what could be or what should
be. The future potential.
And okay, and then we sense a resonance to it, and mm-hmm. and that resonance could be our calling, our purpose.
If our individual purpose goes in resonance there, then we will pulled and drawn to invest our time and our energy and our talent in service of that need.
Okay. Right. So our organizations today, and I just want to stay in the frame of our organizational development,
Yes.
that is, the general framework for this podcast. Do, in your opinion and in your experience, do organizations fulfill needs or fulfill purpose or not? And if we're not fulfilling, meeting a need, then what do we do? Because organizations are always struggling to achieve some outcome and in some ways to meet needs. But doesn't mean there is self-organization, doesn't mean there is harmony or there is value in a larger sense. So
let me think about how to approach this question. So I think there is something like an evolutionary need, and then there is something like a created need, which has become a dynamic of our economical system in order to create ever more growth, right? So we have the tools through marketing, through promotion, through, to create needs. And then as we create those needs, we can increase and grow our businesses because we serve those needs. And we see different phenomena, like, the lifespan of product gets ever shorter. We have learned to throw things away and quickly buy new things. And those, from my perspective, are not evolutionary in the sense of natural needs out of evolution, but those are the phenomena that we as humans have created. And that's a phenomenon of separation that we don't wait, that we are, that we don't, we're not present with what is and follow that sense of what is needed next, because we have a systems that is dependent on continuous growth. We need to create, we need to push a need, we need to make a need, and we have the tools, and that is something else.
Okay. So you make a distinction between created needs and evolutionary needs.
Yes.
Created needs are not serving a movement of evolution, but and they are...
Not necessarily,
okay.
Right.
So you're proposing that organizations shift from serving created needs to serving evolutionary needs, I guess. That's what underlines your point, okay.
I think it's serving, it's based on the understanding of the interconnectedness of everything. And if we, every person and every aspect is like a node of that, if you want to, of that web, and fulfilling that, what is the function of that node, right? That interconnected node, sensing into what is my role here and to what can I contribute here, that would be serving an evolutionary node based on purpose.
So I'm very aware for our audience that we're speaking in a bit theoretical way, but at the same time, bear with us because we're trying to put words and language and something that is subtle, but that is underlying the work we do. And if we're not able to language it, it's difficult to articulate it and to lead people into that. So, So I want to bring in another maybe theoretical word or an expression that you use in your book, but also that you have learned with you at ENCODE. That is the word agency. And I think that's connected to what we're talking about here now, the capacity of individuals to be an agent for meaning, an agent for purpose. I'll let you just elaborate on that.
Yeah. So for a very long time, we have spoken about motivation and, extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. And we need to be motivated and things need to be set up so that they are motivational or something like that. Agency makes all that obsolete because agency is what I hold myself. I have this internal drive to be of service and to be true to that. I hold agency for that. That means I understand it is my responsibility to navigate that. And also my agency grows out of my consciousness of what do I need to do in order to feel that what I do is important and holds meaning for me. I am an agent for that. I will express that in my life, not just in my work. If you differentiate that, it's a whole other conversation, right? But I am aware. I am holding my inner drive and connecting to that, and then I am willing. I hold agency to express that in the world. which means I step into my authenticity, I step into my power, into my love, into my purpose. And that's what I've been written about. So to understand that I have a choice, I hold myself accountable to express what is mine to express. And I hold that for with my agency. I represent that. I'm true to it.
So you were speaking about the knot, the web of this web of interconnectedness, this web of life,
yes,
among people, but among all living, this web of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you
mm-hmm.
said we're like knots, individuals in those, I guess, yeah, in organizations too, by the way, I think we're knots and maze of knots in this web of life. And then our, in a way, the calling that we have would be to understand what's going on in this web of life and to play a role to serve it, to reduce the tension or to find the purpose that is to serve the what is the need there of evolution. And that's our agency. And it's interesting to use this word, this vocabulary, because it helps us understand what is at stake. Yeah. So what does it mean in terms of organizational transformation for change makers, for leaders to understand those things? Why is it interesting for us to have this conversation, for them to have this, that we have this conversation?
So I have to say, I always get a little bit lost when I'm asked, what does that mean for leaders? Because I'm like, so who are we talking about?
Mm.
Right? So, and I don't identify my work as particularly addressed towards people who identify themselves or are identified as leaders versus others that are not.
Yes.
So I have a bit of a hard time answering that question, because honestly, I think what is needed is, and that's a need that I sense, and that I also hold agency for what I do for that, is that what is needed, that we humans understand ourselves as leaders of our own life. And if we are leaders of our own life, we will sometimes lead others through the agency that we have in that. And then in other contexts, we will follow others because it feels important at that point. And for me, the term leaders and leadership is so laden with meaning within organizations, and it automatically triggers this kind of some people are leaders and great leaders and they have these outstanding traits, and it makes them so, it makes, defines something that is so kind of distant and where we're supposed to be in awe and say, wow, right? So I think the question is, how can humanity develop leadership as a distributed phenomenon? And we understand that we can lead ourselves and lead our life, of course, within the responsibility for the greater whole. That's where we come back to the connectedness of everything again. And, you know, whilst I'm saying this, I you know, there's a lot of stuff that comes up related to that. It's like, well, that's easy for people to say who are in a bubble, and that's all. I don't think that this is the case, that everybody has the capacity to lead his or her own life, more or less. But it's not, there's that, that is again a self-organizing dynamic where everybody has his or her certain role. I truly believe that. I believe that defining some people as leaders, and once they're a leader, they're leaders, and others not, is part of the problem.
Mm, nice, interesting. So the way we language the organization, even the structure of the organization, by using those words that actually carry a meaning of power or a meaning of importance, mm-hmm. of hierarchy, mm-hmm. we are disempowering others, or at least in yeah. our mind, from their own agency, their own capacity to take on purpose and make a change and make a difference. And then what does it mean in terms of, like, in an organization, say I'm the head of HR, I'm using the language of organization as it exists today, because that's mm-hmm. that's how it is. And so I want to shift take in what we were saying now, and I would like to completely shift my culture and the way we organized and creating a new space and where to start. And okay, say we just say everybody's There's no leaders anymore. So how can I bring this into reality? How to start with this understanding? How would you do that? Because how have you done? Or you did? What are the steps there? I'm trying to be pragmatic and concrete for you.
Yeah. No,
we're listening.
I understand.
Because it can be very inspired. And at the same time, you know, the question is always how to do, like what to do now. And I just want to hold that question all the time.
And I want to bring in a I'd like to bring in, and I really resonate with your intention to make it more practical. And I would like to quote Tom, who you have spoken to, who is a really dear friend and colleague of mine. And his he always says pithy little statements is purpose is as purpose does, right? So we can talk about on a philosophical level about purpose for hours on end, but it really, it doesn't make a difference until we don't do anything about it, right?
Yes,
So this is just, this kind of just came up when you said, let's do this a little bit more tangible. So, I mean, it really depends so much on where your organization is standing, right? So are you a small organization or a large organization? Really, there is no proof of concept for really large organizations yet. I mean, honestly, in the self-organizing movement, we're still toddlers, really. We're still learning, right? Very much. And I think there are organizations from anything from 3 to probably 1,500, 2,000 people that have actually fully gone into that, but not much larger, if I am informed correctly. I don't know, you might know that even better, right? Fully kicked out the management hierarchy and really gone into an organic, holarchical structure. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean holacracy, right? So I believe that a holarchy is a necessary way of looking at structure when you are self-organized, because that's how nature is structured. But it doesn't mean you have to practice holacracy. I'm an aficionado of holacracy. I always have been. And I've been a big critique of holacracy, and I practice it. But I just want to make that kind of clear, right? So structure, holarchical structure doesn't necessarily mean practicing holacracy. It's helpful, but it doesn't necessarily mean. Yeah. And so it really depends. Are you a startup? Are you starting fresh? Or are you a family organization that has problems with, you know, where the owner and founder probably is leaving and wants to hand it over? You know, there's so many different situations. So when I answer your question, I have to answer it very generalized, right? Because I can't, you know, every situation is individual. Well, if you have an organization where you have a management hierarchy, which automatically means a power hierarchy, like the power over dynamics through the hierarchy, and you will have to start by the top, right, of the hierarchy. And I think there, what you need there is that the people who are right on top, who are the power holders, if you want to use that language, right, have to get very clear on the reasons. I keep coming back to that. Why do you want to shift? If you just want to shift in order to be more agile, that's all good, okay? That's a step in the direction. But what I'm talking about is striving to really shift into this completely new paradigm of self-organization, okay? Because there's many steps in between that you could go just that much or that much, right? But let's say the intention is to go all the way, to really shift, to become a power-shifted, decentralized, self-organized entity. You have to start with the people who are at the top of the organization to do both understanding what it means and start doing their inner work. It just doesn't work without, right? So when I say start doing their inner work, I mean looking at, to reflect on your own patterns, to observe your own behaviors, and to be able to reflect on those behaviors from an observer perspective. That is necessary for you to be able to understand what it is you need to learn in order to shift into this new paradigm. I have experienced it over and over and over again that founders and CEOs, in the best of their intentions, honestly, really honest, good intentions, shifted their organizational system to become a system of distributed authority, but did never, ever understand what that meant for them personally and what it does to actually allow different dynamics to play out. And if you don't address the power issue, it moves into the shadow. And then it starts playing out from the shadow. And I see that over and over and over again, that ultimately the power dynamics don't really stop, which means people keep going and asking, people keep going and asking for permission and so on and so on. So it's like, as like this half thing. So if the people who are used to making ultimately the biggest decisions and who expect to be asked to make those decisions need to do their inner work to understand what it means to step out of that.
Can you explain that? What it means to step out of that? Maybe you can explain that and just we can zoom on this a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. That means that they are invited to develop the trust that the system will learn to function in a different way without you wielding the power. And the thing is that that is a shift that means that in the system, things are going to happen. Things are going to go wrong, you know, and some things are going to go super right, but you have to leave the system to learn to fail forward. And as soon as you interfere, because you don't trust it's ultimately going to work, you stop the learning and the power dynamics fall back and kick in. So the really tricky thing for the people who are in the conventional system are the power holders is not to let go of authority, but to allow others to step up in authority. Because naturally, as a CEO, you have learned to look at certain things. You know more about certain things than others. So you will obviously take roles that hold that need, that where that capacity is needed, right? Like legal stuff, financial stuff, right? The thing is, you don't lead people anymore. You just lead the work. So you have to step out of the power to lead people, but remain the power to lead the work and hold that with agency, right? So, and then let trust that the system will grow into its capacity.
What's the difference between leading the work and leading people?
Leading people means that you have power over someone to tell a person whether a person is, you know, what do I do? And how are you supposed to, I'm being a little bit provocative here. Are you supposed to behave? So I have the power to lead how you are supposed to do your work. If you have a system of distributed authority and distributed leadership, every role that is filled by a person, of course, right, leads its work. So there is no other role that can tell this role, this is how you have to do your work, right? That would be most probably would mean leading another person, even though it's a role perspective. That's a whole different issue that I would like to cover with you later, maybe. So if I am holding one role, let's say I'm holding finance role and somebody else is holding product innovation. I'm just taking something. Okay. Yes. Now, product innovation usually requires resources, right? And this role, product innovation, has the authority to test and define where energy resources for new products, the direction in which that will go. And finance sees that these resources are not available. The authority to make that decision has to be clearly defined. And that's where the leadership lies. Okay. So it's not this role that can tell this role, do more of this and less of this. It has to remain, the authority of the decision has to lie either here or there, and then the system has to figure it out. But if this role decides this is, because it has the authority, decides this is the direction where this is where our resources are going to go to, if resources are available, this role cannot say no, you have to go somewhere else. And if there is a tension, right? So if that doesn't work, there are decision-making processes that don't give power to a person, but that integrate everything, every perspective that is needed to resolve that tension. That's a systemic approach. So every node, again, every part of the whole has the autonomy to lead its work until something else is needed. And then you need a systemic decision-making process to do that. Mm.
Excellent. So I just give a bit of a pre, I'll say that to a bit of teaser. I've interviewed Brian Robertson. It was going to be published very soon. And he speaks about the need for clarity and the need for giving space for people until it touches some limit. And then there's a tension and then we deal with that. Exactly what you just explained. Yes, where are we now? I'm very, very clear. You wanted I would like to touch on that. You were talking about leading the work and then you said, I want to say more about it. So,
yeah, I think what I wanted to say more about it is about leading the work or leading myself. And this brings in the organizational perspective and the personal perspective. And how do we deal with that in self-organization? Because the most, I think, difficult hurdle to really fully step into self-organization, meaning serving a purpose of the organization. And then that means that whenever I express work in service of that purpose, my personal needs and my personal perspective are a differentiated perspective from what is needed from the perspective of the work. In conventional organizing, this is always conflated. So we don't differentiate between what do I as a person need and want versus shifting into the perspective of a clearly defined organizational entity, aka a role, right? And allowing myself to clearly look from that perspective at what is needed now. And so Holacracy defined that as differentiating role and soul, right? And Holacracy then defines the role, the structures and the rules and the processes for role, but not for soul, because Holacracy is not there to govern people. It governs the organization, right? And that is in itself, when you step into that, is an evolutionary trigger. And so that has always been my perspective on Holacracy. It is an evolutionary trigger, a big one and a good one from my perspective. And it only offers by design the answer to one half of that trigger, because it leaves the personal aspect to the person. And if we're on a learning journey, that personal side of us gets kind of invited out. I mean, you know that, right? When we're in a governance meeting, we're invited to stay clearly from which role are we speaking and from which role do we sense the tension and from which role. So we are invited into pure role perspective. And whatever goes on within ourselves, the personal stuff that always happens parallel, the relationship and the relationship always happen at the same time. But in the governance meeting, for example, we're invited to look only at the role perspective. So what happens with that? And that's been the critique on Holacracy forever. So what about the people? It's cold and it's I don't know what, right? Well, so what? It's attention. So what do we do, right? We don't blame Holacracy, but we say, okay, we need something in addition. And so this is where the work that I've developed with Language of Spaces comes in, where we learn to step into the autonomy through learning to differentiate the perspectives and to understand that the organizational aspect of my concern, my problem or tension, however you want to call it, has certain pathways to move it forward. And the personal aspects have totally different aspects. because the intra and interpersonal dynamics can't be navigated through a governance meeting. It's a whole different dynamic. The organic organizational dynamics, that has rules and processes and it's all described. It's just a tool to organize work. But our social dynamics hold a completely different level of complexity and need different clarity, different conversations, different processes. They are differentiated yet never separated. And I developed a process for that reflection process to learn that kind of thing, taken hundreds of people through that process, which ultimately gave rise to the book. Because if you understand and go through that differentiation process, you then suddenly face the learnings full on. Because you don't hide behind the work and behind your function or behind your role. Suddenly, we're people who face each other on eye level. And that's where, you know, our self-leadership really plays out. I'm invited to step into a conversation on eye level with the person who formerly was my boss or reported to me, or I really don't like, but I have to work together with. So, and we have to have a space where we can try ourselves out, where we feel safe, and we people who work together are in charge of creating that space. It's not the organization anymore that is in charge of taking care of us people. It's our autonomy, our agency, our self-reliance, self-responsibility to create that space where we can be together and learn together and fail together and fight together and love together and all of it, right? Mm-hmm. And it is completely independent. Of course, we're interested in having a people context, a collective of people carried by care, concern, and compassion, because then we can do our work together in a good state. But it is not the organization's responsibility to create that, because the organization serves its purpose. It's a tool to organize work, right? So that's the differentiation. And that's where I learned the depth of the belief system around power, how we run into those walls of the old stories of what power is and how power plays out. And that ultimately gave rise to my book and following the purpose of the unification of love and power. We need new stories that hold space for us, that hold us in our journey. As long as we believe in the old power stories and the old love based on dependency and so on, these old stories, we are always going to run into the limitations of that journey.
Thank you. I just want to press the pause button because I want to just make sure I understand and just take it in. So you're saying now that's tricky because language is too poor, but say in a company, I don't want to say organization in this case, but say in a company, there are two contexts. Mm-hmm. One is the organization itself. One is the people context. The people context. So these are different contexts to be managed, right? That needs to be, and holacracy and self-organization often is addressing only the organization context. Well,
sorry, if I may correct that, please. From my perspective, holacracy is part of the self-organization, which governs the work. The people context is part of self-organization. Hmm. It's self-organized as well. And if you take AIM Code's for purpose enterprise, the legal context and financial context as well, right? Absolutely. So that's all part of self. That's all. That's trying to see a whole system. And again, as every system has a boundary, right? Trying to see a whole system, in this case, an entity that forms in service of a purpose with all its aspects. And those aspects are defined in context. Right.
So three contexts.
And in the for purpose enterprise. Yes.
Yeah.
Legal.
Yeah. We don't talk about it now. We have many questions too, but there is the organization context where, and for instance, holacracy could be a method, a tool for managing it, for self-organizing it, this organization context. Right. And then there is the people context that is also self-organized. Yes. But I guess with a different set of tools. And I'm curious about that. And what you're saying is that as you have been navigating this people context, you have surfaced the issue of power and of power over and that you have it made you realize the need to have new stories or to have a new I would say education. You didn't say the word, but the new education to understand the shift of power, the change, the first of all, the impact of the old powers of the hierarchical mm-hmm. power system of power over each other and, mm-hmm. and our mm-hmm. the impacts it has, and to new stories to invent another way to deal with power, right?
Yes, new stories to enable us collectively to have a different understanding and therefore deal differently with power.
Okay.
Yeah.
So good. So talking about the context, self-organizing the people context. Mm-hmm. We know Holacracy has a set of rituals, practices, it's very clear. I'm not going to go into that now, but what are the keys or rituals, principles that you suggest to apply to self-manage the people context? Because that's a very interesting question.
So we've experimented with that since 2015 in ENCODE. And then I sort of individually separately from ENCODE with Language of Spaces. And so we birthed some suggestions of how to navigate the people context, which is, of course, I have to say that I cannot say that often enough, inseparable from the organization context. It's just differentiated, not separated. I just really know how important it is to say that, right?
Okay. Yes.
So there's the first thing is that as collective of people, we need to understand that it is our collective responsibility to create this collective. And so that we as a collective can serve purpose in a good way. And in order to do that, we need to navigate our personal expectations. And what the suggestion of the for-purpose enterprise is to create tension-driven, right? So we have there is a template, what we call either the people agreement or I call it the social agreement or the association agreement. It really doesn't matter. You can call it a cultural agreement if you want to, because culture is something that is that grows in and between people, right? So what we understand in culture is like something that's sort of there and we kind of learn to follow it. And a lot of it is implicit and some of it is explicit, right? That doesn't help us. The mutual understanding is that whatever is made explicit and whatever we can define and agree on is what navigates this people context. And if a tension arises and we don't have an agreement around it, it's just a tension appointed towards something additional is needed. So that means that as a people context, the culture, how you define, how you agree to be with each other, to treat each other, the basic norms that you agree to follow are an emergent phenomenon, emergent from the needs of the collective. And there is a template, sort of a frame that from experience has shown it's helpful if you agree upon, for example, that we always are aware and communicate in a way that it is clear if it is a person-to-person conversation or a role-to-role conversation. Like every interaction begins on a person-to-person. And if I want to speak to you in role, we agree to say, hey, for my role, so-and-so, I need to ask you in your role X. And you have the autonomy to say yes or no. I'm not available in that role right now. It's just one example. Or another thing that has proven to be really useful is if I have a conflict with you, which always happens, right? Every once in a while we have conflicts. You can count on me to approach you in an appreciative manner and ask you about what happened and to inform you how that felt for me. So very often we have conflicts with people. We created something, we triggered the other person. We have no idea. So I can count that if I trigger a colleague and that colleague is hurt by what I said, we agree to assume that we always act by holding the other person in positive regard and guided by purpose. And therefore I can count on the other person to let me know. So if I have the feeling that somebody is, you know, avoiding me or not talking to me, I would wonder. It would disturb me. And then it's, as soon as it triggers me, it's my responsibility, right? I don't care. It's not like, well, if you don't talk to me, then I'm not going to talk to you. That's kindergarten, right? So, and that's just, you know, can you imagine how powerful that is? Because we all know that unresolved conflict grows and ultimately leads to a lot of pain and hurt.
I think I love it. And I understand there is a framework that, like a starting point, mm-hmm. that's some based on principles and then based on the needs, based on tensions, based on experience,
yes.
we can complete it and make it more explicit and build it on. Yeah. And we're building the culture as we go. So it's first of all, I would say the expression of the norms and expectations that we can have on each other as people, as we work together. Mm-hmm. Is there
yes.
like rituals as well? Like you know, like wrestling,
yeah.
you would have a number of rituals. Like
every collective, yeah, every collective needs rituals, right? So I don't know. Some people call it a tribe meeting. Some people would call it a fire, you know, sitting around the fire pit and sharing stories. And it all depends of whether it's online or whether you're in person. We used to have before Corona, and I hope we're coming back to that. It's actually, well, doesn't matter. I'm going off track. I'm sorry. but we used to have working remotely. All different, you know, Europe, America, even South America, even Australia. We used to make sure that we get together. In ENCODE, we came together every 3 months, and whoever possibly could come came. Once in Europe, once in the United States. That's a ritual. And part of the ritual was, you know, we had a headquarter and we cooked together and we hung out together. We did an outing together and we worked together. We had sessions and it just energized our work greatly. And it was very clear when are we enrolled and when are we just hanging out together and having fun or not having conflicts. Boy, did we have conflicts, right? we went through with it. So we had our very own culture, right? And so every organization that needs energy from people needs to have people that have an understanding of what is our culture here and how do we navigate this collective. And you know, another thing that is, I apologize, I thought I turned off. Did you hear the bing? Anyway.
It's okay. It's all right.
It's okay. I'm sorry. So there's a big difference, and it's often very hard for people to understand the difference between a group of people who work together or a collective, which is a system, an interconnected system. Every group of people is a collective. The question is, do we understand it? So we are a node in this social system, right? So the people context is the complex social system, not the organization. That's a differentiation. People define organization as a complex social system. I don't think so. An organization is the structure and the rules and the processes to get organized work. The people context is the complex social system. And as such, it is a collective. And as such, as an individual, we need to surrender just that much in service of a collective. And if we're not comfortable with that surrender, if we don't feel we are at home anymore in that collective, it's just time to go. There might be a million of reasons, and very good reasons. Life goes on and we change and collectives change, right? Without having to blame anyone or anything, right? That's a question of agency and autonomy and stepping into your power again, right? It's my decision to be part of that collective. And if I am part of a collective, I hold as much responsibility for that collective as the collective as a whole and every single member of that collective.
Wow. It's not in the hand of the manager to take care of that anymore.
Yep. Nope. Nope. Yeah. That's the difference between leading people and leading work. Mm. Coming back to your
great.
Your original
Thank you
question.
Very great distinction. Yeah. I'm very happy because that's new content and we never discussed that with anyone in the podcast yet. So thank you very much. I'm curious to one question that you haven't said and you haven't spoken about it, but there are two dots that are connecting from what you've said, people context and the agency and the people's purpose. So I would picture that I see people on one hand, individuals having their own agency, their own purpose, their own expectations, their own drive, their own dreams and wanting to, you know, make a difference and express their potential, et cetera, and grow. So they are driven by their own purpose, their own agency, their mm-hmm. agent, yeah, people. And on the other hand, their roles to be filled in the organization. And those roles, they require some skills, and they need mm-hmm. to be energized. So they need energy in order to deliver whatever they have to deliver as roles. So a big question is the match between people and roles. And the question of agency is key here, because the organization can become a place for people through the roles to express their own agency, their own purpose, their own desire, their own need to grow. And as they do so, as I'm curious to hear your reaction, I just finished. As they do so, the organization can be a place for people to grow, and the people because as it does so, then the organization has the people, the needs, has the energy of the people to actually thrive. So I see the exchange of value between the people and the organization by clarifying roles and everyone's purpose and making it explicit and trying to find a match if possible. Does it make any sense? I'm just curious of that.
So I've been trying to listen very carefully to what you said, and I would maybe go back a little bit. And I think the way I would put it is slightly different. It's not the organization where people grow. It's through doing work in an organization in that way, and through relating to people, to each other in that way, that's how people grow. Because the organization is just the structure. It's the tool that organizes work. And we individuals experience that, and then we take it in as individuals, and we possibly share and learn and experience things and share and learn, and that's how we grow. So the experience of doing work in that way, of energizing roles in that way, of becoming a sensor for the organization, differentiated from my personal perspective, right? And then going back into the individual space, as I call it in Language of Spaces, and reflecting on that and learning through that, and then going into relational space, relating with others and trying myself out like that, that's how I grow. It's the whole set through which I grow, right? Okay. And you talked about the agency and engaging in the organization. So there's a capacity here that is super important when you work in a self-organized entity, and that is purpose alignment. And purpose alignment means, number one, you have the awareness that is right for you at the current moment of your own personal purpose. It really, really needs that. So some sense of why I am here, for what is important to me to bring into the world. Okay, one thing. And then knowing the purpose of the organization. And when I engage in role, right, or when I do work in service of that organization's purpose, and it makes sense for my personal purpose as well, then I am purpose aligned. So, and that is an evolutionary phenomenon as such, because it is my decision to energize a role in an organization, and the agency to do that, because that purpose of that organization feels super important to me, because it is aligned with my personal purpose. It is always something else. My personal purpose is my thing. I'll take that wherever I go. The organizational purpose is inherent to this entity, right?
Yeah. But that's alignment.
And so, that's alignment.
Yeah. And we can facilitate this alignment. I guess there's a need to facilitate, or maybe not. But do you, I was just
wondering. What do you mean by we can facilitate that alignment?
Maybe not, but can we facilitate the expression, like when do we take the time to listen and be interested? Maybe we don't have to, because people, like you say, they are agent, they are autonomous to do so. But if I'm thinking of a large organization in particular, I'm interested to try to support that people in my organization are aligned, meaning that what they do in the role that they have is enabling their expression of their own purpose.
So I'm not quite sure I understand what you mean by facilitating.
Well, facilitating, I'm thinking, okay, I'll go to the depths of my thought, and sorry for it's not clear. So
no, go ahead.
I was wondering, what is the role of HR in the future? And isn't it like a marketplace when you have on one hand the people and on the other hand the roles? And on one hand, the roles need energy, and the people, they just need to express their purpose. And of course, they do it in line with their organizing purpose, but they just need to express themselves, and they just...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
I understand.
Me there.
That's...
So I was wondering if the need or a way to think of HR in the future is simply to create a kind of a marketplace or a space, and that term is actually used today, a marketplace to reconcile as much as possible the roles with what they need in terms of skills and the energy that they have and the activities that they require to do as in roles with the people's expectations and desire. And so you see because in a self-organization, people can have a set of roles, not just one, but usually a number of roles. You can use the roles as the organization can become a space in which people just grow and through the work, you just said it much better than I say it now, but by the set of roles that they're fulfilling, they can actually have a more meaningful work. And I think there is a value in aligning people's expectation and desire for growth. So asking them and having them making it explicit and listening to it and be interested in it and trying to match it as much as possible with the roles that are required for the organization to do its job. Mm. Does it make any sense?
Yeah. And there's a few things that I would like to
I feel my language is so poor compared to yours now.
No, come on, please. No, it's not at all. And I it's also not, it's just the field where
just go ahead. It's
my
your field.
Heart.
Absolutely. Yes,
just
totally.
Really belong. Totally. And also it's just I'm just bringing in my perspective.
Yes.
You know, there's I never ever feel like I have a truth or whatever. It's just my heart work, and I have a perspective on these things.
Sure.
So, please. The one thing that I'm kind of not quite sure whether I understood you correctly, but in the words how you were speaking, it felt to me like you were saying the organization is going to do something to accommodate for people to feel purpose aligned and that kind of thing. I don't know whether you said that, but that's how I heard, and also because the organization needs energy with skill and with agency to fill the roles, that energy to fill roles. And I think you said something like what people just want to express their purpose. And that's where I think I would like to kind of add and say, from the perspective of the organization, of course, profits when a person is highly purpose aligned and brings that agency and energy into roles. But the organization does not care at all whether a person expresses his or her own purpose. The organization cares about its own purpose and about work being done in service of its own purpose. That's all the organization cares about. And in order to have the requisite energy, you want the collective to have a sense that this is a collective of purpose-aligned individuals, right? So the conversation about personal purpose, why am I here? Why do I think that this organization, that from the perspective of my personal purpose, it makes sense to engage with this organization? That is a conversation that ideally that wants to happen in the people context, because I want to know, what is your personal purpose? Why are you here? And I can also have a conversation of, I feel my personal purpose is shifting. It's evolving. I have learned more. I have grown. And that can mean that we feel less purpose aligned and it's time to move on. It's not the fault of the organization or my fault. It's just the evolutionary phenomenon of purpose, right? But that conversation really needs to happen. And a practical thing, I'm sorry if I misinterpreted something that you said, but just a practical thing for people coming into an organization, you first want the fit for people context and then the fit for org, because you need the system to be supported And for example, how we dealt with this in ENCODE, and I have worked with other organizations, is you bring, there's a person wants to join an organization. The people context facilitates conversation to get to know these people, to talk about purpose, talk about purpose alignment, ask why do you think, does that make sense for you to come here? What do you like doing? And then if someone in the people context has a veto, that person won't come on board, or it has to be integrated or whatever. So it is really the collective of the people that cares for the energy that then gets invested in the organization.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Thank you for such clarity. And I think this distinction between the people context and the organizational context is absolutely key. And that's very new. And indeed, it has been a big of holacracy not to be able to explicit this. And it was kind of taken away, and it was creating frustration and also a bit of misunderstanding. People coming from a coaching perspective, they would only look at the people context kind of.
Yes.
And not so much. And the big revolution with holacracy, and I also want to include sociocracy, and is to have a language to think and to articulate the organization in a way that is based on empowerment principles and purpose centricity principles, which was missing.
Yeah. And that's what came up, you know, I mean, those two sort of at the core of my work currently now is one, the self-coaching practice that I introduce in my book. And the other one is the language of spaces, which is really to actually create spaces for people working on their own real life issues to actually experience the value of that differentiation. And I'm just training three people in an organization to bring those processes, they're practicing holacracy, and to bring those processes to support the systems, both the organizational and the people context, to improve their tension processing. Because so many tensions do not get processed because they're conflated, and people don't know how to actually untangle that complexity. They feel uncomfortable and they don't know where to go with it. So, and I only yesterday, it's like, I did the third session, and this person who holds a sort of a holacracy role said, this is like, oh my God, I understand the practice in a whole new way, right? And this is what happens. If you understand what it means to take perspective and to actually take the responsibility and the agency to act from the learnings out of that perspective taking.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That's very profound, I think. What you've just shared is very, very profound if we really take it in. I'm curious to, maybe that will be last question to you. I was thinking of people in organizations that are, you know, classic with employees and large, and people haven't chosen each other, and there was never a people context for people, you know, with veto and there's all this and but still they want to do one step to better. And so I don't know, if someone in such an organization is listening, is a change agent or leader, so-called leader in this language, classic language.
Yes.
What can they simply take in as a maybe a takeaway or one simple practice that would enable to differentiate the two contexts, because they still exist, and to bring maybe more consciousness in it and more consciousness, so many people have more space to become agents, to find their purpose, and there is more space there and more vitality in there.
Yeah, that's a good.
Good one.
You want a small step, right?
Well, at least something possible, because I understand the concept.
Yeah.
It's like I understand also what you're saying works better if people are self-employed, and like you have all kind of we didn't address the legal aspect, but I think it's one of those that you want to.
Yeah, but I don't. You don't necessarily have to be self-employed. No. This works with employment, and I mean, I talked about the for-purpose enterprise because it is like I really have to say, the most sophisticated self-organizing system a whole. That's what there is. But many organizations are way, way far away from that, right? So I'm aware of that reality, right? So I think I would say that, again, there has to be an intention of shifting into a curiosity to move towards, I'd say, self-organization. Right. So if you have a management hierarchy and you have problems in the management hierarchy. And the intention, I said that, I think, in the beginning, and the intention is just to improve the management hierarchy. I don't have an answer for that, right? Because it's just, yeah, we're always going to be a management hierarchy, but we want the people to function better, kind of thing. That's okay. And there's many super good tools for that. I think the work that I do with Language of Spaces is that's not the best tool to work if you want to just improve management hierarchy. Honestly, I don't think so. Because the management hierarchy, even if the people think this is a good idea, but the system as such won't allow people to step into their agency, autonomy, and their self-responsibility to act and to try. It's just the system just doesn't fully allow that. So I think there are a lot of good practices about, you know, agile and I don't know, self-managed teams and so on. Those have been sort of tested out and are functioning in management hierarchies. And I think that's what is needed there. In my case, I'm also being clear about its purpose alignment for me or purpose expression for me. I believe that self-organization is something that would serve the web of life. It serves the web of life. And the more of that is here, the more the work we do in the world is going to be in service of all, not just some. So, and I mean of all in the sense of serving a part of the greater whole and understanding, being in that understanding. So that's what brings me forward. If there is an intention to go in that direction, then I would say, if it's possible, start to work towards role-based working, right? So you know that, and I know that. And in parallel, I think it's just have groups of people trained to understand the differentiation of the organization context and the people context. You have to be trained, because you can only understand that if you do that, if you have a personally relevant experience with it. So you work with your own problems, your own tensions that come up during work. It's the only way you can actually build that capacity, because otherwise it just stays theoretical.
How can they reach out to you and if you want to know more or get help into that?
Well, yeah, thank you for asking that. So my sort of overall email address to get in touch with me is christiane@christianesplace.com.
I'll put it in the presentation of the podcast for sure. Okay.
And there's more. I can send them to you, and also the websites where you can find both information about my book, the journal log, and Language of Spaces.
Excellent.
Okay.
Look, Kristen, thank you. It's a lot there, and I'm very grateful, and I'm impressed with the mastery. And I just want to underline the importance of language and distinctions, and that you master so well. And I'm taking class here with you, although I've been in this field for many years. Thank you for the research, and I would say the discovery of the people context, if you can put it this way, and how it's matching the organizational context. And I think, yeah. Very, very useful. I'd like to end with the classic way to end in this podcast, asking you maybe for a minute, leaving you alone with the audience and maybe saying whatever you want, or leaving this moment of silence if you prefer, whatever comes to you. For, you know, people listening are leaders, change makers, they are people who are, I think, trying to bring more consciousness and another, build something different that works better for the whole, wherever they are and whatever the size of the organization is and wherever it is. At whatever step in this journey they are. So then I will leave you now.
Yeah, we've addressed so many different issues. And I think what can be really, really helpful is to believe and understand that we have everything we need inside of us. And that part of the journey into a world that is completely unknown is to trust in our own capacity and our own resources. And in that sense, I would like to invite you to take a deep breath and to turn your awareness inward, as if you were kind of going down your throat into your heart space, maybe a little bit further down into your solar plexus, somewhere in the middle there. between your heart space and the solar plexus is your magical garden, your sacred space. And just breathe into that space. What does it feel like? Does it have a temperature? What are the colors, the forms, the sounds? Now imagine this is a place where you can invite the resources. Your resources can be your love. Where in this space would your love be situated? Can be your power. Where in your sacred space would your power be situated? Could be your source, the voice of your soul. Where would your source be situated? Imagine at any time where you feel you could need the support of your love, your power, your source, and over time, even more resources such as your creativity, even your saboteur or your inner child and others will come and visit, and you can go into communication to ask for support and help. And from what you learn in the communication with these inner resources that you have, take one deep breath and imagine that you're now bringing these learnings into the way you show up in the world and in connection with others. The journey begins within you, spreads out in your relationship to others and to all. Thank you.
And I'm back. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
Christian, for this moment. It was a pleasure to have you on this podcast. Thank you. It's great to connect with people who are creating a change, making a change, and educating us on what to do and how to do it.
So grateful, Mikhail. Thank you so much for inviting me. What an inspiring conversation. Thank you.
Absolutely. And well, everyone, thank you for listening. And I'm sure this has brought you some inspiration and hopefully ideas to whatever you're doing, find the next step and create clarity for you to move on. Thank you very much. And goodbye, everyone.
Thank you, Mike.